Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut on Eagle FM, with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And as always, one exciting topic after another, 5 days a week, 4:30 to 6, just on Eagle FM. And I can be, we, there's no I in team, I can bearing another one. You know, I mean, we do it like 5 days a week. Like from Monday to Friday, we're just going another one, another one, another one, another one. Like DJ Khaled. So, wherever you're tuned in from, I feel at home. And, well, you know, you just, so let's sound volume, just increase the volume a little bit and just, sit back, relax and enjoy wherever you are listening from, whether you are listening under the desk while at work, in which case then we just have to congratulate you for being such a huge fan, very huge fan. Thank you for tuning in, whether you're tuned in, here at home in Namibia or abroad, or you are on your, way, driving back home or wherever you're going. We're not judging. Just saying that, relationship problems these days are being solved with shotguns. So you may want to stay away from people's, houses, people's, hobbies, people's sweethearts. And, when things end, just, cut your losses and, you start throwing punches, see the police shows up and now you're doing, 25 to life. It's, believe me, it's not worthy. Just not worthy. So, just, that's my advice has always been, guys, that's why Nami Brewery is there for. You're welcome. But, not here to actually, help you consume alcoholic beverages. Namibians, we don't need advice on that. We are experts. It's a survival instinct to some degree. But, today's discussion is going to be based on, a report coming out of the UK this report was produced last month, and it's based on the conclusion that, which is somewhat, okay, I have to point out that, it wasn't until I saw the report. That's when I saw just how obvious a lot of things basically pointed out in the report is. And the report is based on the fact that climate change is not a myth. And because of that, with time, if proper mechanisms of combating climate change are not put in place, we are just going to start seeing more and more negative impacts of climate change. And this is going to lead to national security, which took me back to, I think, was that 2023 or 2024? Where, I'm not sure if it was the SADC or the African Union that reached a conclusion that, economic inequality is not good for any country or any bloc. That is, Africa being one of them. It's not good for, because the more economic disparity you have in a group of people, the more desperate the people at the receiving end of that economic inequality is. And desperate people have been known to do the most desperate things to survive. And, for those of you that say, I can't eat without washing my hands. I can't eat that. It's too dirty. Oh no, you have never been put in a corner by life. When you are put in a desperate situation, survival instinct kicks in. When survival instinct kicks in, you would be shocked at what you are able to do to survive. Those, post-apocalyptic movies or what's it? Yeah. Movies that you watch about, portraying the end of the world after a nuclear catastrophe, for example. Yeah. Actually, it's much worse than that. Much, much worse. Human beings, when you throw them into a corner where they have to fight to survive, it becomes ugly. Very ugly. And that's because if you, you know, I can take you back to the story of, was that in the 1980s when then a Chilean soccer team crashed in the Andes Mountain. This is in South America, where this is a plane full of soccer players, and it crashed in the Andes Mountain. And Andes Mountain is a mountain is one of the longest mountain ranges on the planet. It's in the middle of nowhere, and this is mountainous places. Now, I don't know how the Mayans were actually able to farm those areas. They are very, very elevated above, you know, they have some, that's where you find some of the most insane altitudes. So, this plane crashes and they're in the middle of nowhere in the, you know, in the 1980s. So what happens? The survivor, I think one gentleman that actually decided to, one survivor who decided to write a book on the whole story. He's a doctor by profession. Last time I checked about 2-3 years ago. You want to know what he did for the, he spent like almost a week there without any rescue. You want to know what he ate? His friends.
Yeah.
You'll be there like, no, I can't eat that. Oh, no. Oh, no. You're gonna. Like when you're put in a corner, you'll be shocked at what you are able to do to survive. After being rescued, you can imagine how many interviews homeboy had to conduct, and everyone all of a sudden was curious. They're like, really? How does human meat taste like? Newsflash, don't try it. It's not healthy. I'm not saying you are not healthy. I'm just saying it's not healthy. It's been proven. Not healthy. Human beings, cannibalism is not a good idea. It's like, don't try it. You can look into Kuru disease. You can take it from there. Now I will just come back to my climate change discussion. So the UK government put up earlier last month, they put up a report titled Global Biodiversity Loss, Ecosystem Collapse and National Security. The implication being global biodiversity, we are looking at things like climate change and how it's impacting different parts of the world in terms of sustenance of not just human, the human species, but also flora and fauna, both marine and land. Now, the problem you begin to see here is that it's becoming a little difficult to live on this planet. Thanks, it turns out, mostly to human activities that have basically exacerbated the change in climate. You know, for our own convenience and, moving from point A to point B, from mid-1700, we just decided to go on an invention spree. We invented all kinds of, all kinds of engines and the world so that we can transport ourselves from point A to point B as, faster than our ancestors ever were ever able to. So, fast forward a couple of 100 years later, we are paying the price for that. Because, these machines that were getting us from point A to point B were spewing a bunch of just toxic chemicals in the atmosphere, and turns out Mother Nature just, did not appreciate it very well. Doesn't like the whole, too much carbon in the atmosphere or whatever, chemicals that were basically spewing in the name of making money. Now, that report highlights, two main things. Mostly two main things. One, the reliance of the UK. The reliance on the, of the UK on imports, and how this change in, change in climate is going to impact, basically any country's national security, food security, and a lot of different, throw financial security in there. And that's, we sort of like got a picture of that during the COVID-19 lockdowns. This is when you saw a lot of countries that produced a lot of products, especially, especially food. There were, countries like India were saying, like, look, we really want to sell our wheat, but, we also have to take care of people here at home. We are not just going to export everything. Egypt also decided to go like, it's not that we don't want to sell our chickens to everyone else. It's just that we have people that need it here at home. So we'll just prioritize here at home. So market protectionism to some degree is going to be put in a corner. Or more like a lot of countries are going to be put in a corner from the look of things from this report. Yeah. A lot of countries are going to end up finding themselves in a corner where they have to, well, practice market protectionism. I'm not sure if market protectionism is the best way to describe it, because this is not saying that no one is able to participate in our market except ourselves, which is what market protectionism is, which is basically, now that I think about it, is a terrible description. But this is cordoning off of your own resources, so you can only feed your own people. Because we know that if you don't take care of your own people at home, you are, a lot of negative sentiment is going to emanate from that. And no leader wants a riot on their hands because they failed to take care of their people. So that's a summary of it. So let's look at, let's dive a little bit into detail in terms of summary. And then we look at it now in one end to another, because we're going to start from the point of view of this report. With regards to how the climate change problems is going to, is already impacting, biodiversity across the planet, and how that impact over a long run is going to lead to a lot of countries, thinking along the lines of, should we sell this product to those countries so we can generate money, or should we feed the people here at home so that they don't coup our behind out of power? Now, as a leader, as you can imagine, the decision that you are going to make in that, when you're put in that situation where you sort of like find yourself between a rock and a hard place. Now, we're going to start with the, we just start with the report, and then some of the concerns that are pointed out in the report, and then some of the challenges when it comes to, implementing climate change mitigation strategies. The framework have already been laid out by the UN, both on an international and national level. The blueprint on how to mitigate all the climate change mitigation strategies the framework of climate change mitigation strategies have already been laid out. The issue is coming together, cooperating as different countries with different political, religious, economic, and financial ideologies to come together and basically say, we may be different. You and I may worship a different, different gods, and we believe, you believe yours is more powerful and real than mine. I believe mine is more powerful and real than yours. How about we just set all that aside and understand one fact? We only have one planet Earth, and if it's cooked, well cooked, irrespective of your religious ideology. It sounds very easy to come to that agreement, except when you look at the current political atmosphere just across the planet, especially the western part of the planet, the western part of the world, and the countries that are under Western influence in terms of economic and political, economic and political ideologies, which is basically 90% of the developing world. We have a long way to go. Now, to understand this, we have to go back to 2020. We have to go back to COP21, 2015, Paris. 2015, COP, aka Conference of Parties. Over 190 countries, 190 states met in Paris, France, to reach, agreements on, this place we call planet Earth is slowly turning into a microwave, and sooner or later we're going to end up being the popcorns. So unless we do something. So 2015, they gather around, basically UN member states, they meet with their, conference of parties, 21. The latest one is one that took place in Brazil last year. That was COP 30. So, well, they've come a long way, these guys. They've come a long way. Now, and obviously, they're going somewhere. And there'll be somewhere. Now, climate change is a global emergency that goes beyond national borders, and its issue, and it is an issue that requires international
cooperation, and coordinated solutions at all levels. Now, this was the UN's. This is according to the UN Climate Action Guys. This was 2015. Let's go through that again. Climate change is a global emergency that goes beyond national borders, and it's an issue that requires international cooperation and coordinated solutions at all levels. International cooperation at all levels. International. What did we talk about yesterday? The Secretary General of the UN, in his press conference on the priorities of 2026. What did he say? This world is getting more and more divided by the day. Now, if to save ourselves from turning into popcorns, we need to cooperate, then we are doing the complete opposite. Now, that means, the UK government has a very genuine concern here. And that concern is, looking at the division that we are looking at, and it gets much worse with the US withdrawal of, from these agreements. Now, what was part of these agreements? Now, to tackle climate change and its negative impact, again, we're back to the UN climate action here, to tackle climate change and the negative impacts, world leaders at the UN 2015, put this in mind, 2015, at the UN climate change conference, COP21, in Paris, COP21 in Paris reached a breakthrough on the 12th of December 2015. Historic Paris Agreement. Was it a breakthrough though? Because again, from the look of things, breakthrough on paper, nailed it. But in real life, I don't know. Not working at all. The agreements were simple. They set aside that, you know what, they basically gave themselves goals that all the members present here, all 195 of them, who are now like 194 states and the European Union, which is an economic bloc. Now, the agreements were set along, sets of long-term goals to guide all nations, all member states. Let's not say all nations. I think these guys were just being a little too optimistic here. Was to set all nations, aka all member states, to sustainably reduce a global greenhouse gases emission to hold global temperature increase well below 2.5, well below 2 degrees above pre-industrial level, to pursue efforts to limit it to 1.5 degrees and above pre-industrial level, recognizing that that this would significantly reduce the risk and impact of climate change. That's the one. You know what? Let's just make sure. Let's not increase the temperature anymore with our human activities. How are we doing in that department, though? We're still going to war over oil. That means, we're pretty much still burning it. Yeah. We're not good at solving these problems now, are we? Now, periodically assess the collective progress towards achieving purpose of this agreement and its long-term goals. The periodical assessment is this whole, COP thing, what they do every year, right? Like last year they met in Brazil. What happens basically is every member state that is part of this 2015 COP21 agreement, they show up every year. They've been showing up. They showed up, COP26, COP27, 28. Well, was that 26, Glasgow, 27, Egypt, 28, Qatar, 29, Baku, Azerbaijan, and 30, Brazil. Now, all these things, all they just have to do is, what they do, mostly what they discuss is just them showing up and saying, what is your country doing to help us, in terms of a climate mitigation strategy? Are you investing in, electric vehicles? Are you investing more in renewable energy sources? Are you using more, climate-friendly agricultural practices and all those things. And every country now just shows up and start showing off what they are doing best to meet this 2015 Paris Agreement requirements, or more like goals that they have set for themselves. And here's the last one, to provide financial and to provide financing to developing countries to mitigate climate change, strengthen resilience, and enhance abilities to adapt to climate change. Now, here's the thing. That last part is going to be very significant. A lot of developed countries, especially in Western world, decided to shift much of their industrial base in Asia. That's why Asia, you find some of the biggest, carbon foot countries that's where you find some of the countries with the biggest carbon footprint. In Asia. Is this an Asian problem? No. This is a global problem. First of all, this is where it becomes a spider web now, because to make money, you have to sell more products. The more products you make, the more fuel you are burning. Therefore, the more carbon you are emitting. And there are a lot of solutions to that. One of them being, you could just make quality products that won't break down in a week, so that you don't have to make more, and therefore you don't have to burn more fuel, and you don't have to emit more carbon. That's just one problem. A bunch of manufacturers today are about maximizing profit. And to do that, a lot of products today are made with something known as planned obsolescence in mind. In other words, they are just intentionally designed to break as soon as possible so that you can get a new one, so that when you are, the more you buy, the more the shareholders make money. That doesn't sound very climate friendly. Now, like, if you ask me, this UK, the guys that compiled this report, that's the first thing they should have looked at. Because, now, as someone that practices subsistence farming, I farm to feed my family. When you manufacture something to live a flamboyant lifestyle, and you make it to break, you make it breakable on purpose, so you can sell more and make more money. If that's your mentality, it will be very difficult for you to come and convince me to practice sustainable subsistence farming. Because subsistence farming, for the most part, is already sustainable, because it's already environmentally friendly for the most part, at least in comparison to, to commercial agriculture, because now you throw in a tractor and, not very environmentally friendly now, are we? So, we're going to take a break, and when we come back on the other side, we continue with this discussion. And then we now get in the report, and then we go and conclude with, we just dive into the report and then conclude with the challenges of implementing a lot of things that we basically agreed in the 2015 Paris Agreements. Not that easy. Seems like someone has stolen my computer. So, we continue. So, into the report now, shall we? One of the things the report points out is that one of the issues that the report points out is that global biodiversity loss, ecosystem collapse, and national security. A national security assessment is this is basically based on a 14-page report put out by the UK government last month, highlighting the UK's reliance on global markets for its its food and fertilizer. They are looking at how biodiversity is being impacted by climate change the world over, and they are looking at their reliance on imports, especially in relations to food and fertilizer. In other words, what happens when this biodiversity impact reaches that side, and they cannot produce what they are supplying us anymore? What do we do? Yeah. Now, That's a very good question, especially in relations to climate change. That's a very good question to ask yourself, and not just for the UK government to ask themselves. That's a good question for everyone to ask themselves, like every country to ask themselves. Now, the main focus here, then, it may seem, is the reliance or the reliance that a nation has on other countries. Now, no one is an island. No country has it all. All countries, including the developed ones, rely on developing countries on one or two things. I'll give you an example. If you want to ruin Valentine's Day, just make Ivory Coast and Ghana angry. Because they produce, 50-60%? They literally feed the global chocolate industry. Take Ivory Coast and Ghana out of the equation, your chocolate industry is cooked. But some of the biggest chocolate makers are not even found in Africa. Actually, not in Africa. Nestle is one of them. Mars is one of them. And these guys are supplied by who? Ivory Coast and Ghana, for the most part. Now, then you have a little bit, now that brings us, that brings us to the report now that we are going to dive into on the other side of the break. Home Run with Helmed and Dwight on Eagle FM. He's still coming. He's the field guy. He's the one who's gallivanting, meeting people. I like my comfort zone. I mean, it's called a comfort zone for a reason. Who would want to leave a comfort zone?
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And welcome back to Home Run with Helmed on Eagle FM. Now, let's get into that awesome report now, shall we? The report is titled Global Biodiversity Loss, Ecosystem and National Security. This is looking at how climate change is slowly going to lead to national security issues. I would say we're already there. We're pretty much already there. Climate change is only one of those things that should be the least of our worries when it comes to national security, if you ask me. It's a genuine concern, but it's the least of our worries, compared to political instabilities. Like, sort out the political instabilities, and then you can tell me that, let's not worry about climate change causing national security. I'm just saying we have much bigger things to worry about. One of them being political instability. One of the biggest issues of population displacement for a lot of countries is political instability. That's man-made. Climate change is also man-made to some degree, but political instability is more direct in human cause. So, this is the problem when you read too much of these reports. You begin to find patterns that just doesn't make sense. One thing that's pointed out, is that unless major interventions are put in place, these threats will lead, the threats of climate change will lead to national security in a in ways like, increased migration and increased migration and increased competition resources. Really? Lead to? This is just me. If you ask me, we are already there. Now, this according to the report. Just take a listen. The report warns that without major interventions, these threats will increase with environmental degradation and risk leading to geopolitical instabilities already there, economic insecurities again already there, conflict another big check, migration and increased competition for resources again. If you ask me, none of this is new. Should it still be a concern? Yeah. Is it something that's something that we should consider as an epiphany? Like Eureka, like we're having a Eureka moment? No. Absolutely not. Why? Again, as all this time. But reading between the lines, it becomes apparent that climate change concerns contained in the report are going to be faced by all countries across the globe. And if, well, in their words, not major interventions are not put in place. And considering the current geopolitical divisions, this already has happened. Could this be like fighting an uphill battle? My short answer, yes. My long answer, that's where now we dive in. But before we get to some of the, before we get to the challenges of implementing all this, again, none of these problems are new. Mass immigration for a lot of countries in this world are caused by, well, a bunch of fully grown men and women fighting over power to the point of starting a civil war. So a lot of people run. Or their country is being bombed in the name of, in the name of oil. Sorry, did I say oil? I mean freedom. And democracy. So, to the report now, shall we? Oh. There's a lot of obvious things in this report, I swear. I'll just try. Be serious. Global ecosystem degradation collapse threaten UK national security and prosperity. Ecosystem degradation, destruction. Ecosystem destruction is going to impact agriculture. Impacting agriculture means you are impacting food. And people, human though we may, advanced though we like to consider ourselves that we are, advanced species, we are still animal in foundation. So every time that a resource is missing where we are, we migrate to where they have it in abundance. We have all studied migration of the koikoi. I like how, I really don't like how we make it sound like the koikois are the only one that migrated. Because we all migrated. A lot of us found, the way I always, I jokingly like to say that, a lot of us that find ourselves in southern parts of Africa, black or white, well, we're not from here. There were massive migrations coming from a lot of different parts of Africa. East Africa, West Africa. I think the easiest way to tell whether your ancestry is West Africa based or East African based is, look in the mirror. If you have a forehead that's big enough to generate green energy, in terms of solar, chances are very high you are looking at East Africa. No wonder they call it the Horn of Africa. Have you seen the foreheads coming out of East Africa? If you have a big forehead, congratulations. You and I, most likely East Africa. And you most likely don't have a lot of muscles. Yeah, you have the body type known as, an endomorph. Yeah, as endomorph or ectomorph, one of those two. The slim one that's built for endurance. Which is why Kenyans have been winning those trophies like crazy. Yeah, If you want to murder us, just tell us to lift weights. Nah, we don't do weights. Endurance, that's our thing. In other words, we are marathon runners. Lifting weights, no, that's not us. So, back to the report now. Global ecosystem degradation and collapse threaten UK national security and prosperity. I would say global national security. But it's a UK report, so they can just do that. Now, the world is already experiencing impacts, including crop failure, intensified natural disasters, and infectious diseases outbreak. And threats will increase in degradation and intensify with collapse. Without major interventions to reverse the current trends, this is highly likely to continue beyond 2050. Oh, yeah, I totally now agree with that. Totally agree with that. Just a few problems here. National security assessments. This national security assessment draws a broad range of sources, including scientific literature and expert judgment. And it's not a scientific report. It assesses a reasonable worst case scenario and applies the uncertainty framework used in intelligence assessments, MI5, MI6. Yeah, like literally, according to UK, is it Euronews? Yeah, according to Euronews. A new report from UK in reference to the report that we just put a pause on. According to Euronews, a new report from UK's Department of Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, which is understood to have involved MI5 and MI6. That's their intelligent guys. Intelligence community. I know they like to call them intelligence community. Every country has them, but intelligence community, I don't know about intelligence community. But, come on. And intelligence guys are literally government-sanctioned thieves. Like, if you want to go to a place and steal something that you can't send police and soldiers to go and steal, you send the intelligence guys. And every country does it. So, it's not something that's unique to Namibia or just the CIA, most famous thanks to Hollywood. Every country does it. In other words, every country, they understand that sometimes they steal from each other, especially information. Welcome to the world we live in. Actually, that's the world as it has been. The National Security Assessment, back to the report now. The National Security Assessment draws a broad range of resources, including both scientific literature and expert judgment. But it is not a scientific report. It assesses a reasonable worst-case scenario and applies the uncertainty framework used in intelligence assessments. Its aim is to support UK national security planning by identifying risks to the UK from global biodiversity loss and ecosystem collapse. Immigration is not enough. Immigration due to displacement, due to political instability and economic collapse. That's not enough. Like, look, the point I'm trying to make here is, if we can't solve problems that are emanating from political instabilities, you can't tell me that we are going to solve problems that will emanate from climate change. Clearly, we are terrible at solving problems. Because mass immigration is one of those problems that are anticipated to arise from this from ecosystem collapse. Because if when ecosystem collapse, agriculture is part of the ecosystem. If that practice of producing food also collapse, people move to where there is food, where the collapse is somewhat more slower, or they have an alternative resources with regards to, you know, with regards to food production. And when that happens, what happens? Well, people are going to move. So that means migration is going to be a part of it. What, migration is already a part of it right now. One of the biggest concerns of a lot of countries in Western Europe is migration. And that migration problem is already being caused by what? Economic and political instabilities from a lot of especially developing countries. Now, what you are telling me is that we didn't solve migrations that is caused, you know, mass immigration caused by political instability. But the one that will be caused by climate change, that one we will be able to solve. Really? Nah. Look, whatever it is that we are smoking on this planet, I'm pretty sure there are aliens out there that are going, can I have some? Because clearly you guys are nuts. Well, that's like me saying that, you know what, I'm not able to buy a private jet from my salary. But I'm pretty sure if you give me your $10, I will be able to afford it. You'd be like, you can afford it with your salary. What makes you think you can afford it with the $10 I'm going to give you? Because clearly the financial discipline is out through the window. I don't know. Just asking. I'm just saying. These problems are already... The problems that are anticipated, that are going to be caused by climate change, we already have those problems, and they are already caused by political and economic instabilities. Now, my question is, if we can't solve them now, with the current costs, what is going to make immigration, mass immigration caused by climate change easier to solve? Problems are going to remain the same. There's a lot of money at stake, which is why we are very reluctant to solve the problem, which is why I used the example of planned obsolescence as a big problem that is the elephant in the room. Every year, a new phone comes out, a new car comes out, new clothes comes out, new, you know, chair, new table, new computer comes out. All these things require production, and production requires a lot of energy. A lot of energy means a lot of burning. A lot of burning means a lot of carbon emission. We can make high quality products. It's just that making high quality products makes those products last longer. That means, the longer your products last, the less you are likely going to buy another one. Therefore, the people that make the products are not going to make money. So for them to keep making their money, the insatiable appetite for shareholder dividends will be the end of us. But, I'm suspecting the shareholders are the ones that finance the report. It's not even mentioned. Well, lucky for you, I'm nosy, so I'll just keep poking on it. Yeah, it's a nice report. Other than that, it's a very nice one. But there are a lot of elephants in the room, and it's just walking around like, you know what, not that. Let's take a break.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana konongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ningefata Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honoreta Time, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileko, Berewa, Dora Hetatu, Natu, Bali, O Hetatu, Matatu, Oma Filane, Eagle FM, the Eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, this is Home Run with Helmed and Dwight on Eagle FM. Yeah. It's gallivanting. The events, gathering more information for yours truly here to just read through and make fun of for the most part. I really enjoy making fun. Which is why I don't basically go out a lot. analytical confidence, yeah, they're just covering a lot of things. You know, how we explain uncertainty in this assessment, there are a lot of uncertainty. So, again, not new. Biodiversity loss in global, is a global threat. Again, not new. But let's just entertain that a little bit. Then we move to biodiversity loss impact on national security. And then we can move to the challenges. That is coming from the, again, another elephant in the room, the current geopolitical atmosphere, which is not a very friendly one. That was yesterday's home run. You can just go back to yesterday's podcast. So, biodiversity loss is a global threat. The world is already experiencing the impact of biodiversity loss, according to the report, including a crop failure, intensified natural disaster, and the infectious diseases, disease outbreak. Ecosystem degradation is occurring across all regions and ecosystems. Here's the thing. A human being, you have cells that makes you, right? According to science, you have more microorganisms in you than your cells. In other words, you are about 60% microorganisms and about 40% human being. You have microorganisms in your mouth, you have microorganisms in your stomach, you have microorganisms in a lot of places. And those microorganisms, especially in your tummy, they are those that are known as gut bacteria. Actually, you need them there. Every time they are not there, you have a serious health problem. There's one medical procedure I came across I never thought, that medical procedure made me start eating healthy. Of transferring stool from someone to a patient. After I came across, I watch a lot of documentaries for the sake of my sanity. Maybe I, you know, just have to reduce. And like, it's a life-saving procedure. It's just the comedian in me couldn't stop thinking about it in a funny way. You have gut bacteria. Those bacteria in your stomach, they need you to survive, and you need them to be healthy. They help you digest your food. And some of them we eat, you know, some microorganisms we eat on purpose. It's called, yogurt is an excellent example. Yogurt contains, a bacteria, my biology is now floating away, bacteria known as something bacillus. There's bacteria in milk, and it's delicious. It's not bad for you. It's good for you. It's the right kind of bacteria. In other words, you, as you are sitting, standing, whatever it is that you are doing. Okay, now that I just said that out loud, I'm just having a lot of... you, wherever you are, as a human being yourself, you are an ecosystem. You are an ecosystem. There are microorganisms that rely on you to survive. And there are a lot of microorganisms that you share something, symbiotic relationship with. In other words, you are good neighbors. They benefit from you and you benefit from them. Which is an excellent relationship. Every time there is an imbalance in that relationship, you have some serious issues. Every time that you have, you know, your gut bacteria, your bacteria in your stomach, have a problem. Take, for example, your stomach is too acidic. You start having a lot of health issues. Well, planet Earth is not very different. You know, those, things that we just look down on, like mosquitoes and flies, for example. Oh no, they are not useless. They are not useless. They are very important to the overall global food chain. They contribute a lot. Without them, you would have a lot of problems you never thought you would have without flies. Like, you need mosquitoes. You need flies. You don't need them to sort of like, you know, just straight up cook and eat. No. They participate in the overall ecosystem. If you take them out, you cause an imbalance in that ecosystem and you have some serious problems on your hands. So, the global ecosystem on the, you know, the global ecosystem, thanks to this thing called world climate change and also human activities, because, well, we just hunt and eat pretty much anything we can, you know, sink our teeth into. It's, if you disrupt a single piece of the ecosystem, you cause cascading effects. Again, you don't have to be a biologist to basically know that. Biodiversity loss is a global threat. The world is already experiencing the impacts of biodiversity loss, including crop failure, intensified natural disaster, and infectious disease outbreak. Ecosystem degradation is occurring across all regions, and this is across the world, basically. The average size of monitored wildlife population declined by 73% between 1970 and 2020. Population of vertebrate, these are your, if you remember your biology, you know, properly, these are animals with backbones, according to, you know, biology, animal kingdom classification. You know, that very nice, what's that, King Philip comes over for ginger snacks. King Philip, King, well, that's kingdom. And Philip, that's phylum. Come, that's is that class? Yeah, over order for family. Ginger genius snacks species. Yes, nailed it. Yeah. So that also now all these now all these impacts also speaks into the you know the impact of you know. On the overall ecosystem, including other types of resources like water. Populations have shown the largest loss falling, you know, falling 80% in the same period of animals. Turns out we are very good at cooking and eating them. The rate of extinction is 10 to 100 times higher than average, you know, than average over the past 10 million years. Now we're just diving into evolution here, so no time for that. We have a break, and on the other side, we look at biodiversity loss, loss and impact on national security. Then we can conclude with the challenges. Home run with Helmut.
O Shoprite e o vane go jetaro go go pitropo o na o rimo pumbe o kene o droke go mya noari o ino shironga mi pumbi o ngashi o harmo ma tere gatano to kanzo pi komputa yo rama original ko dro mi ngom pali na geta tu no seno bin go go ino go ningo ke jinda tu do pora na elbo pasta ko dro mi ngom hamano no go ino senda mi ngom go ino go tare na pano Shoprite po pi pinango e dere pi kusa January no fanisa zingi ziriko si go ga geta tu ga February no vo Shoprite ko ndando dire pe vinto vro.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight in absentia, according to the legal jargons. We now move to the biodiversity part, to the national security part of that discussion. And if you just tuned in, you are listening to Home Run with Helmut on Eagle FM. 29 minutes left to the hour of six. And today's discussion is based on the UK report, where they look at how biodiversity collapse, ecosystem collapse due to climate change is slowly leading to a national security concern, slowly becoming a national security concern. One of the things pointed out is the mass immigration. I'm like, really? That's already a problem now. Again, the same question. I'm going to ask, if we can't solve things like mass immigration that's being caused by political instability, what makes us think we're going to solve mass immigration when it's being caused by climate change? Actually, well, that pretty much is already happening. Biodiversity loss, impacts on national security. Nature is a foundation of national security. Of course it is. Biodiversity loss is putting at a risk ecosystem service, on which human societies depend on. Just say, you know, including water, food, clean air, and critical resources. Just say food, agriculture, central, very central to it. Now, the impact will range from crop failure, intensified natural disasters, infectious disease outbreaks, to conflict within, you know, within and between, between states, political instability, and erosion of global economic prosperity. Everything that's already taking place now. Because of what? Natural resources competition. That will lead to the, you know, increased scarce in natural resources will become, you know, the focus on greater competition between states and non-state actors, exacerbating existing conflicts. Really? Starting new ones and threatening global security and prosperity. Global security? You think the world is secure now? That's so cute. This report was this year. Now let's go to some, you know, to why I'm may come off as somewhat, I don't mean to be like a condescending or something. No, not really. I just like to draw patterns. And it's actually very delicious to draw patterns in between different parts of a paragraph and different parts of different reports and something like that. It's beautiful. It brings about questions that you just sit there and start going. So, I think this is new. Because it's not. So, what is the solution to biodiversity, you know, to preventing this whole degradation in biodiversity and ecosystem? Is it? We stick to the promises we made during COP21 in Paris back in 2015. Except, in theory, we meet every year. You know, write fancy speeches, sleep in fancy hotels, and rumble a bunch of nonsense, for the most part. But practicing those words, we are terrible as a species. We're terrible at it. We're very good at talking. Practicing it, not good. 27 January 2026. U.S. withdrawal from landmark Paris Climate Agreement threatens a race to the bottom. That was Amnesty International. That was shortly after the U.S. decided, you know what, this whole Paris Agreement and the conservation of environment, you know, climate change mitigation strategy, that's a whole lot of waste of time. You know what, we're just going to get the heck out of here. And why? Well, because we just don't want to stop banning stuff because we make a lot of money banning stuff. Like, what's there not to understand? I mean, it's not rocket science. Now, according to Amnesty International, this is now responding to the withdrawal of the United States of America from the Paris Agreement, from the Paris Climate Agreements. The Amnesty International Program Director for Climate Change, or ESG, and corporate accountability said the U.S. withdrawal from the Paris Agreement sets a disturbing precedent that seeks to instigate a race to the bottom, and along with its withdrawal from other major global climate pacts, this including your World Health Organization, and aims to dismantle the global system of cooperation on climate action. Now, why is the U.S. withdrawing? I mean, well, after all, it's voluntary joining. Why can't you just voluntarily leave? Well, it's a major concern if you are the one signing the biggest check and you are the one with the biggest influence. When everyone listens to you, it's kind of tricky. You know, when you leave, everyone is going to be like, oh, please don't leave. Well, they're not going to listen to us. Now, Amnesty International then goes on to say that the U.S. is one of the several powerful anti-climate actors, but as an influential superpower, this decision, along with the acts of coercion and bullying, can't believe I'm not the one using that language now, and bullying of other countries and powerful actors to double down on fossil fuel. That causes harm and threatens to reverse more than a decade of global climate progress under the agreements. These are your 2015 Paris agreements that they are now referring to. The Trump administration instituted the withdrawal from Paris agreements last year in January because they had to follow the withdrawal protocols. Most of these international agreements gives you like a year. You have to put in a year notice, before you're told, okay, now you can withdraw. You can just walk there and start saying, I'm out. Well, you can, like, practically, but, technically, you would take a year. Now, while the U.S. may no longer be party to the Paris agreements, according to Amnesty International, it still has legal obligations to protect humanity from worsening impacts of climate change, as confirmed by the International Court of Justice in its landmark 2025 advisory opinion. And I was on the floor laughing. Advisory opinion? Advisory. So it doesn't have any consequences. Wow. Well, how'd that happen? Oh, easy. I'm going to walk you through it. Putting America first. Trump is really telling people, America first. In January 20, 2025, President Trump issued an executive order, Order 14162, in which Section 3A provided directions to the U.S., to the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Was that Linda Thomas Greenfield at the time? Was that her? Oh, the new guy, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations regarding withdrawal of the United Nations from the United States for the second time from the Paris Agreement under the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. Now, some members of Congress, obviously expressed a strong disapproval for the decision. But, Trump being Trump was like, yeah, you know what, I'm the president. He hand me that executive order, make I sign him. The problem is, when the guy that has the owner of the ball is leaving, that also means the end of the match, boss, because, unless you have a backup plan, which from the look of things, I don't think a lot of countries have actually a backup plan in place when it comes to, how do you continue when when the guy you have depended on is threatening to leave. And the guy that depended on in terms of influence and power and sheer economic size, economic and military size, and also influence in terms of persuading both by exalio stick and diplomacy, countries to follow along the Paris, agreements. Because, one most important part of the Paris agreements, the last part, there are three main parts. Sustainability, sustainability discussion in terms of, environmental friendly practices, whether it be energy generation or farming. That was one. To keep the global temperature below 2 degrees. That was one. The second one was a periodical assessment where they have to meet annually for every country to basically give assurance or more like give a report of what they are doing to combat climate change. Now, the last one is the most important one. The one with which, if you take it out of the question, the first two are useless. That's the financing part. The last agreement was to provide financing to developing countries to mitigate climate change, strengthen resilience, and enhance abilities to adapt to climate impacts. Here's the thing. You are not going to do very well into transitioning your energy infrastructure from non-renewable to renewable ones if you don't have the money. And this was pointed out last year in January by the International Energy Agency. The International Energy Agency Executive Director, Fatih Birol, he was basically, now this was Summit of the Future, Summit of the Future. Something like that. It has energy security in it. It's basically giving pointers on how countries can attract investors that will come and invest in their energy transition. And one thing he points out is, one, diversify your energy sources. You can't just have wind because what happens when the wind is not blowing? You can't just have solar because what happens when the sun is not shining? You can't just have water because what happens when there is a drought and the water levels drop? And we saw that happen to Zambia. So you're going to have to diversify your energy sources. That's one. Two, and the exact language he used was, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Which is a very brilliant analogy. Now, that brings up one thing. And that is, yes, transition is a brilliant idea, but you need money. Now, unless you have the money, you will have to depend on investors. And these investors will need assurances. Most of them are in Epstein files. Very, very, very disturbing files. Now, here's the thing. These assurances means that you have to ensure that there is, first of all, political stability. Because energy investments are massive, and the return on investment takes a very long time for it to be recouped back. Now, because of that, a lot of investors will look at a lot of things to consider before investing. I don't want to pour millions of my money in a country that will, that goes to war every 2 years and have a different president every 2 years. And policies are changing faster than the president can blink. Like, the policies that you are basing your investment now may not be there tomorrow, type of fast-changing policies. So, the money part, this money part, is a very important part. The countries that has the money, the biggest contributors to the UN budget, or basically UN funding, is the US, China, Germany. Throw France in there, but it's more often been the US, Germany, China, Well, obviously, we have all played, you know, played soccer growing up. We know that the guy that owns the ball basically controls the match. If his team is losing, he can just say, well, take his ball and go home, and the match is over. So, in other words, even if, you know, he's misbehaving, you just give him a free pass because, well, you don't want the match to end. Isn't that just pathetic? It is actually pathetic. So, the funding part is a significant part of it. So, Donald Trump woke up one day and decided, you know what, I am going to just, you know, withdraw my country out of this. Now, on the White House website, very nice article, putting America first in international environmental agreements. You go, Trump. This was in January last year. By authority vested in me as president by the Constitution and the law of the United States of America, it is hereby ordered as follow. And that's when he, you know, that's when he basically pointed to the, in section 102, he's basically pointing at, at withdrawing the U.S. from Paris climate agreements. So that means in trying to solve this whole ecosystem degradation that we're all scared of, that is going to lead to national security, not just of the UK, but of all countries across the world, because say, well, climate change doesn't know any borders. When it comes to working towards the solutions of solving this problem, it's going to be a little bit challenging because it requires united effort. Except the world right now is anything but united. Hey, Dwight.
Hey, Hamid. And good evening to the listeners.
How are the events?
Well, it literally speaks into what we are discussing.
Oh, boy.
Even though this is a UK-centric perspective, but it's obviously a discussion that you've highlighted that can be applied to every country around the world. Okay. Let me put it this way.
Yeah.
Specifically to the countries that give the best presentation of some sort of semblance of decent living and some elements of protection, for example, from being resilient to climate change, obviously. So if we look at resilience factors, yes, the engagement I just came from has such a particular measure, but it actually lends itself back into a more localized discussion of Namibia, which you and I already had crossed off our list. We knew that it won't end because that has to do with open contracting and with EITI initiative. However, and also the developments of what happened yesterday in Parliament, specifically where the Oil and Gas Amendments Bill was, the Petroleum Act the amendments to the Petroleum Act was put forward for ascension of powers from the minister to the presidency and for the establishment of a director general. No? Is it a deputy director general? Yes, that's the position's name. In the presidency that oversees these negotiations of, you know, oil and gas developments that you and I also, Helmut, have already sort of like highlighted. Hey, don't get happy now for any oil and gas today, because 2034 is, you know, it's a decent 10-year period that these companies are working on. So, feeding into obviously the big discussion and where you left off just now with the US withdrawing from multiple, what do they call them? International treaties and multipolar organizations. Well, it's not multipolar, it's multilateral organizations. One of the key ones is, Helmut, today actually, between Tuesday and today, the UK is hosting the IPBES. So it stands for Intergovernmental Panel on Science and Environment, for biodiversity, so and so on, protection, organization. It's an organization Namibia is, through various affiliations, affiliated to, What I mean by that, if you're part of the UNFCCC, which is the UN Forum for Climate Change Convention, then you are somehow indirectly connected to this development that's happening in Manchester, the UK. This report that the UK brought out fits in directly towards what happens in nature and nature's ecosystems literally impacts, for example, your food systems.
Yeah.
You can just start from your food systems. If you start from food systems, these are things like, what do wild animals eat out there besides the agricultural activity that us humans are endeavoring in? So what happens? Then we start seeing more wildlife conflict scenarios. Then we start seeing more, we would call it pests and parasites, things like the red locust scenario. And the red locust, remember, did not go away from us.
Yeah.
The only reason is probably we're just not hearing any re-emergence events taking place. But if people who know people, like you that have family still in one of the two Kavango regions, if you decide to now go home and you go ask, have you guys seen the red locust anywhere? There would be still someone confirming to you, yes. And the red locust was a migrational move by this insect from Egypt all the way down to Namibia, which is very far. So when we see these things starting to happen, yes, it starts looking like Moses and the seven. What was it? How many afflictions were those that Moses warned that Pharaoh about? You know, first it was the frogs, then it was the locusts.
Then
it was the drought.
You know, the water turning
to blood.
To blood. Yeah.
Yeah. So if people are seeing any aspect of some sort of biblical interventions taking place. Sure, yeah.
Okay, like some kind of cosmic retribution or something.
Yeah, sure. You can think in your own mind's eye that this would be, sort of like a replay of what happened when Moses was still there, you know, he and his half brother, the Pharaoh at that time.
Yeah.
You know, where had the little familial, argument situation. So yeah, you can look at it in that same scenario. That is ultimately what changing weather systems, climatic patterns, and changing climatic patterns are influencing.
Yeah.
Now, I want to divorce where I just came from now, which has to do literally with the extractive industry. But at the heart of what is causing this has been the extractive industry discussion. Interesting to note also, our colleague HD yesterday shared a graphic about the largest carbon dioxide emitters currently in 2025, as of 2025, in the world. And China's way ahead in that particular analysis, which has been the big headache of countries like China and India, because at the 2024 COP, what was it, COP 29, the one that was held in Azerbaijan.
Yeah.
At COP 29, there was a huge argument specifically brought up by India and China. That the guys that the parties that were negotiating, besides the least developed countries, that the guys that were negotiating were saying, India and China also have to now say yes to these particular goals that are set forth. But here's the thing. Countries like the UK and America and the whole of Europe have had 200 years to develop and industrialize. So now if a country like China, which is now absorbing all this energy from natural resources, is obviously going to look like the largest carbon dioxide emitter. And there's a huge adoption for hybrid and electric cars in China, a larger adoption than you would find in Europe and in North America, because Europe and North America, okay, firstly, Donald Trump went and said, you know, drill, baby, drill last year. And obviously he went and did 3 January in Venezuela.
Yeah, for more drill, baby, drill.
For more drill, baby, drill. And Europe is now trying to find, you know, are they going to be the champions of green hydrogen and renewables? Which they are looking like, that they're the only flag-bearing major developmental or major economic bloc championing green energy. Because they signed the Balkans, the North Sea Wind Farm Alliance, which was Germany and the Scandinavian countries and one and two other more countries. They are championing green hydrogen production and ammonia production. The EU is championing renewable energy adoption. Namibia is a signatory to those EU particular discussions. The EU obviously wants critical rare earth minerals. The UK is now waking up from their Brexit hangover, realizing that they can't go anywhere.
That didn't end well.
They can't go anywhere without the EU. Now they really want to join back and become a stakeholder in this discussion.
Yeah.
One of the obvious falling out points has been that areas like the Middle East that we don't know of in terms of what's going on there with their climate change reporting or their climate mitigation strategy reporting, because there are still conflict zones there. It's, they still have, what you call those people, asylum seekers and refugees and immigrants, still traveling towards Europe. I mean, do you know what's the most laughable thing of even that I saw yesterday? The BBC went and literally interviewed or gave like airtime to two South Sudanese immigrants.
Yeah.
These guys could speak proper English. And they said,
with a British accent.
No, not with a British accent. They had their genuine, you know, South Sudanese accent.
Yeah.
It's the South Sudanese almost the tall guys.
Yeah.
And they went and said, yes, we advocate for immigrants to go to the UK.
Really?
Well, obviously you've got a factor in that South Sudan is a major oil producer.
Yeah.
Sudan is also a major oil producer in Africa. The downside here is we don't know actually what's going on, because those are technically authoritarian regimes with their penchant, meaning their appetite for regular conflict. Because if you and I disagree across the table, Helmut, then it quickly leads to, yeah, let's see each other outside with each one loaded with an AK-47. Meaning it's Wild West rules, Wild West lawmaking, and until literally the last wine bites the dust, themes are persisting in that neighborhood of Africa.
And one thing is, if it wasn't for death, those guys would have won president forever. Look, not...
Well, did you hear the running joke of what happened today in South Sudan?
Well,
where Salva Kiir fired two of his aides for appointing a deceased man who died 2 years ago to an election panel.
That can't be true.
You can look it up, huh? You can look it up. So he fired his two aides there. He fired them.
Yeah.
Because they appointed this guy, or they suggested or recommended this deceased man's
name.
A dead
guy?
And yes, he's a deceased guy. And he was from one of the opposition parties. Now, if you also don't know that that vice president of South Sudan was one of the opposing warlords to Salva Kiir, because Salva Kiir is the other warlord, and the vice president is the other warlord, so it obviously throws political system literally into the river, because it doesn't make sense if these guys are already like warlords that had to reconcile with each other. So if we look at this discussion of what that UK report states. Yes, it will impact the ability to grow food somewhere else.
Yeah.
It will impact the ability, for example, other parts of the world that are part of the developing world to have resilient water supply systems. It will also have a particular impact specifically on the overall developmental goals of such countries. Specifically of the global south.
Yeah.
And the second scenario is obviously that you now have this different kind of national discourse happening in countries like the UK, like the United States, like Canada, like France. France is a different question, but it's still happening in France because Marie Le Pen is still there. She and another particular politician who also has his own political party. And then you've got the AfD in Germany. You've got the Danes, who also now have such particular political movements and machinations developing. Sweden the same, Norway the same. What am I talking about? These are anti-immigrant campaigns and anti-immigrant sentiments and national discourses taking place in those European countries. Yeah. Why? Because if you saw those two South Sudanese guys in that BBC in that BBC interview that I saw yesterday, I was like, oh my goodness. These giving more ammunition to conservative.
These guys are shooting themselves in the foot.
Technically, yeah.
Yeah.
They're giving more ammunition to conservative politicians in the UK than ever before. So, yeah, I mean, it's gonna be a lovely bumpy ride.
I agree with Trevor Noah that when it comes to immigration,
no.
Everyone else can complain. The UK is not allowed to complain.
Well,
because we didn't invite them. They just showed up. So now it's our turn to just show up.
Well, if we just don't
shoplift.
If you want to act like those two Nigerians, the one Nigerian, one Jamaican, I can't remember where the other guy came from. The guys that went to Scotland and decided to go colonize a river. At the end of last year. And then the police had to come and forcibly.
Those guys went through Jamaica because that's not ordinary.
Well, okay. It might have been the Jamaican's idea. But somehow I see, because the Nigerians, they don't care. If they move to the UK, they literally move to go and become UK citizens because they don't want to be Nigerian citizens anymore.
Yeah, look, what I mean by they went through Jamaica. I think they were inspired by Bob Marley.
You know, one of them is a Jamaican.
Oh yeah, makes sense.
By birth, so the Jamaican, was probably the guy that instigated the whole process, because. We also need to try and understand what this discussion is all about.
Yeah.
If the UK brings out such a report, Namibia states in its nationally determined contributions that we need to access climate financing to help with our mitigation strategies.
Yeah.
It cannot just come out of our budget, national budget every year.
Yeah, that's the third point in their 2015 Paris Agreement commitments.
Yeah, and
they have to provide small guys, aka developing countries,
and
with the financing.
Still, up until COP30 last year, they still did not finalize the loss and damage fund. No one wants to touch the COP28 initiative by Abu Dhabi. Remember, the one that looks like a private investment facility. That literally sounds the same flavors of the Board of Peace by Donald Trump. Cause it looks like if it walks like a duck, it quacks like a duck. Definitely it is a duck. So yeah.
All right.
That was the situation there.
All right. 4 minutes into the hour of six. That brings us to the end of, Home Run for today. And coming up is Business with Roy. That's episode 3. You all stay tuned.